The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Ksuvos Kafayin Tes. The Gemara continues its discussion of the Shtar Mavrachas. A Shtar Mavrachas is where someone writes a sham shtar to put his assets in someone else's name to shield them from people who would otherwise have a claim against them, such as creditors who have a claim against the assets of their debtors. In the case of the Gemara, we're discussing a woman who wants to put her assets in someone else's name to prevent her husband from gaining control over them, as a husband normally does, have control over his wife's assets. In this lecture and the following lecture, we discuss a situation which is sort of the converse of Shtar Mavrachas. We discuss a spouse, particularly a husband, who puts assets in his wife's name, but we suspect, we believe, that he may not actually mean to transfer assets to his wife's name. He may not really concede that these are his wife's assets. They're really his assets, but for whatever reason, he's putting them in his wife's name. Does the halacha take the shtar at face value and say, if the shtar puts the assets in her name, then they're hers? Or do we say, no, the shtar may not really mean what he says, and the assets are retained by the husband? In this lecture, we discuss the classic sources, Rishonim, and some of the early Achronim, who explain the Rishonim and explain the relevant sugyos of the Gemara. In the following share, we discuss this from the perspective of the later, the modern, contemporary poskim, how they apply the rules of the Rishonim and other principles to contemporary situations involving contemporary realia, reasons why a husband might put assets in his wife's name. But first, in this lecture, we discuss the primary sources, the classic sources, the Rishonim and the earlier Achronim. Now, there are three main tshuvas of the Rishonim that are the foundation of the sugya, one tshuva of the Rush, two tshuvas of the Rashba. Rashba's tshuvas say more or less the same thing. They seem to diverge from the Rush. And this machlokas, this apparent machlokas between the Rush and the Rashba, is the foundation of the whole sugya. The Rush's tshuva is fairly short, fairly simple. An even more simple version of it appears in the Torah. The Rush's question was, a woman says that certain properties of her husband's estate, that her late husband's estate, are actually, half of them belong to her. Why? Because her husband bought them Mishel Ma'oseha, Chetzia Mishel Ma'oseha. Half the funding of these properties was from her assets, her funds. They're her funds because she inherited them from her relatives in Beis Avia. And her proof of this is Hashtar Kasev B'Shem Shneim. The shtar governing the instrument concerning these properties is in both of their names, jointly in their names. Says the Rush, absolutely, quite right, we follow the shtar. Anytime we have a shtar, the husband bought property that's written Gam B'Shem Ha'isha, that's jointly in the woman's name too, Chetkim Shalah. And the Rush's reason is, the key phrase is, Ki Adam Hakon Akarka Ein Derech Shechtav Et Ishto B'Shtar Hakniya. A person buys property, it is not the normal custom for him to put his wife in the documents. Now again, this is certainly not at all clear that this is the case in contemporary times. We'll discuss more of that in the following share. But the Rush claims in his time, in his place, it was not the Derech. And therefore, this person who put his wife on the document, Nikarim Advarim, that they are from her assets. Shechetzi of Dmei Akarka Hei Mishalah, half the funding of the property was indeed from her. And if the Shtar Kniya is actually completely in her name, not jointly, it's totally in her name, then Hadavar Yadua, that it's her property. Same thing applies to the whole. The deed is entirely in her name. The deed is half jointly in her name. It's just the same, the Rush says, as if the deed, the shtar, would be in someone else's name. The shtar controls. The shtar tells us whose property it is. And therefore, if the shtar is in her name entirely, it's her property. If the shtar is jointly in their names, then the property is joint. And we follow what the shtar says. The Torah also passes like this. Shulchan Aruch brings this opinion. The Rashba, however, seems to disagree. The Rashba has two longer tshuvas. Very similar situation. The first tshuva of the Rashba was a question of Kana Batim. The husband had bought houses. The second tshuva dealt with Shtar Echov. The Rashba says there were Harbe Shtar Echov. In both cases, the documents, the Shtaras of the houses, the Shtaras of the Chovas, were in the woman's name, jointly in both their names, but included the woman's name. And now the widow said, I'm entitled to these properties, these homes, these Shtaras, because they were in my name. She says, again, like the Rush says, they were bought with my assets, Nechasim Shenafel and Beis Avia Kanoasim. In addition to my Ksuva, this was a sort of Tosefes Ksuva, either because, again, either they were bought with her assets or with Tosefes Ksuva given to her by her husband. And the proof, again, is, just as in the Rush, the proof is that the shtar is in her name. So she says she should be entitled to a share of the property. The Rashba does not accept this. The Rashba says that in spite of the fact that the shtar is in her name, it makes no difference. we say, nevertheless, to the husband's property. And the Rashba brings two Gemaras that indicate that any property found in the context of a marriage, even if the documents are in the woman's name, the property is still presumed to be the husband's property. One Gemara is a Braisa that says that Gemara, Sugya, Gemara and Baba Basra, two Gemaras are blot apart. One Gemara says that even if a husband, even if property is found in a wife's name, even if the husband participated, cooperated in putting property in his wife's name, it doesn't prove anything. Why would the husband do that? The Gemara talks about a case where a husband actually sold his wife property. He deliberately signed over property to her. Doesn't mean it's her property. Why not? Really, the husband wanted to discover secret assets, secret funds that he really was entitled to at least have control over as Nechse Malug. Yusufrucht, he had the right to use those assets, even if they're her assets during the marriage. She was trying to hide them from him. So in order to discover, to reveal her assets, he pretended to sell her the property in order for her to produce and to turn over these funds, which he could then seize and take, as is his right, as Nechse Malug. But the shtar itself doesn't prove anything, because the shtar may have been a sham for the purpose of Lagluye Zuzi. That is one Gemara. So again, the fact that the husband cooperated and agreed to put assets in her name doesn't prove anything, because we have a very valid, potentially valid, ulterior motive for the shtar, so the shtar cannot be used as proof. Another Gemara the Rashba brings, it says, Isha hanosas v'nosanis b'toch habayis, a woman, back in the time of Chazal, not all women were involved in managing the household affairs. Sometimes it was all the husband. The woman didn't do anything. She just did domestic duties. She didn't do anything, I mean, of a financial nature. She didn't run the household business. But if the Isha is nosas v'nosanis b'toch habayis, if she's entrusted by the husband with managing the finances of the household, then even if we find documents, onos u'shtaros, alavav nun vav tof, shtaros, in her name, alel haviraya, she has to prove the assets are hers. By the fact that she's entrusted by the husband with the care or the management of his assets, we can no longer prove anything from any documents, because since she has control over them, she could have easily put them in her name. So the Rashba says, we see from these two Gemaras, the fact that documents are in the woman's name doesn't prove anything. The husband may have done it l'gluye zuze. The husband may have done it because he entrusted her and she had the power and she put them in her own name. And the Rashba says, this is a dispute in the Pesukim, but the Rashba says, stam isha b'chaye baila, a woman typically is nosas v'nosanis b'toch habayis. Pesukim debate what exactly nosas v'nosanis b'toch habayis means, whether it's really true that a stam isha qualifies, but the Rashba says it is. Therefore, the Rashba says in the first tshuva that property in her name, the documents that indicate that it's in her name, do not prove anything. The second tshuva, Rashba makes the same basic point, that just because property's in her name doesn't prove anything, even if she claims that they were purchased with her assets, doesn't prove anything. Her proof is from the shtar, that the shtar is in her name. That doesn't prove anything. One raya, again, is from the din of nosas v'nosanis b'toch habayis. As long as she has control over as long as she manages the household assets, she could have put it in her name herself. Doesn't prove anything. It's matzu, he says, it's common that the woman would put aside property, take for herself of her husband's assets, or from her ma'asi yadayim, the income she produced, which really, again, al pi din belongs to the husband. Even though it's true she might have assets, Mitzia, Matana, maybe Yerusha, those cases are not Shchiyah. Much more plausible, much more likely is the assets are her husband. And additionally, he says in the second Shuvah, the husband's Taina, that he did it for various reasons, issues of Ribbis, issues of Achrayas, not clear exactly what that means. The husband, here he doesn't say Lugluya Zuzi, here he proposes various other alternative reasons the husband might have had for putting it in her name or someone else's name in general. He brings a Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara says that if a person buys property and instructs the seller to make out the deed to somebody else, the Resh Galusa, or just another private citizen, the shtar doesn't prove anything. We say there could be various reasons why he put it in the name of the Resh Galusa, Mishum Yakra, covered for the Resh Galusa, deference to the Resh Galusa, or to scare people off. So people shouldn't try to seize the property, shouldn't raise claims, people were scared of the Resh Galusa, or because he didn't want to be known as the rich man, he didn't want assets in his name. People don't want to seem to be rich. A person could have very many reasons for putting property in someone else's name. The woman's claim is implausible. The shtar is not a raya because we have these two Gemaras. The Gemara says that a husband might do it. The husband is Isha Nasaz Manasanas Bataka Bias. We can't bring any proof from the shtaras or the first Shuvah Lugulu Yizuzi. So because of all these various reasons, the fact that a husband might have reasons to put a shtar in her name, and because a woman in general is not assumed to own the property property that's in the context of the marriage, she manages it, she manages to gain control over it due to her management, But the Rashba says repeatedly, unless the one exception is, if she's mukzekis, that she has money, if we know that she has nifse malug, then her claim that she bought, that these properties that are in her name were bought with her nifse malug, then it becomes plausible. But if we don't know of any actual nifse malug, the fact that the document is in her name, the Rashba says, apparently contrary to the Rush says if the document is in her name, that does prove that she has the property. The Rashba says absolutely not. The documents don't prove anything. The husband may have done it for various reasons. She does not presume to have any property. We don't bring any raias from documents that she owns property. So the Rashba says we will not give her the property simply because the documents are in her name. Now, the Achronim ask on the Rush, the Tur, the Rush, they say the Rashba brought a raya from the din of Nosas, but it says betocha bayis. When a woman manages the household assets, the fact that shtaros are in her name doesn't prove anything. So why didn't the Rush think of that? The Rush says if the documents are in her name, mali isha, mali acher. Just as if the documents are in someone else's name, it makes no difference. The documents are dispositive. Says the Prisha, why? The Rashba Lachara has a good point. That anytime an isha is nosas, but a sanis betocha bayis, the documents don't prove anything. So the Prisha says, a very simple sma, the Prisha, a very simple, very straightforward chiluk. He says, if the documents were written and drafted or instructed to be drafted by her, she dealt with the seller, she had the documents drawn up, she told the sofer how to draw up the documents, then we say they don't prove anything. Because since she was managing the household affairs, she was managing the finances, she could have done whatever she wanted. She could have issued instructions for the documents to be drawn up in her name. But if the husband drew up the documents, if we know for a fact that the husband drew them up himself, or gave the orders for their drafting, and he explicitly, consciously, deliberately said, put them in the woman's name, then the documents are dispositive, because who cares that she's no status for no status? He was involved in these documents, and he instructed them to be in her name. So he clearly wanted them in her name, and that's exactly the Rush's point. The Rush said it's not the derech for a man to put assets in his wife's name, and if we know that he was in control, that he determined the structure of these documents, then the documents are indeed proof that the properties belong to the woman, and that is pshat in the Shita of the Rush. The Nesivos Mishpat of Rav Chaim Al-Ghazi under Ben Yeruchim does not like this svara. He also says that is apparently the meaning of the Rush, the Tur, but lo yadati minayin lo, I don't know what the makar for such a din is, he says. The Gemara says, stomachatani, the Gemara simply says that as long as she's nosas, but nosas betocha bayis, any documents in her name are not dispositive. He doesn't start saying it depends whether she drew them up, whether he drew them up. The stomach of the Gemara implies that documents never prove anything if she's nosas for nosas betocha bayis. And the svar also, he says, if a woman is nosas for nosas betocha bayis, what does that mean? It means the husband trusts her to manage his affairs. He gives her power to buy and sell and manage his property. So once he trusts her, he says, who said he wouldn't trust her to put the document in her name? Maybe to help her manage the affair, to help her manage the estate, he's willing to instruct her to allow her to put the property in her name. The Rush said the person doesn't do that. So I guess you have to be there. You have to know the culture. The Rush says, as an empirical fact, it is not the custom of men to put property in the wives' names. Rav Chaim Al-Ghazi says, who says? Once he trusts her, once she's no sas for nosas betocha bayis, maybe he would trust her. Maybe he would want the property put in her name. Lo reisi, Rav Chaim Al-Ghazi says, b'chol ha-poskim, to make this distinction. And the Rashba disagrees, he says. So he's not happy with the Rush, but this is the pshat of the Prisha and the Nesivos Mishpat. What the Rush means, that there's a distinction between shtaros that were drafted, presumably drafted by the woman, versus shtaros that were drafted by the husband. The Shach brings the Sma, that this is pshat of the Rush. The Sma wanted to learn that's pshat of the Ramah also, that Ramah is passing like the Rush. The Shach says, he seems to accept that might be pshat of the Rush, but he says, lehalacha, we don't follow this. That's not pshat of the Ramah, and lehalacha, we don't follow this Rush, he says, because the Rashba disagrees. The Rashba, he says, clearly says that shtaros are not a raya, and the text of the Rashba, at least in one of the tshuvas, explicitly is v'kosef hashtaros al shma, that even though he put the shtar, even though the husband put the shtar in her name, the Rashba still feels that the shtar is not a raya for all the reasons that he gives. In other words, the Shach feels, again, the Shach sides with the Rashba against the Rush, like Rabbi Yeruchim said, like the Nesivos Mishpat says, that the Rush as far as not compelling. The Shach feels the Iker is like the Rashba. Shtaros don't prove anything, even if we know he signed the shtar. And the Shach says, Iker ka Rashba, and the Shach seems to feel that the Iker Svara is Lagluya Zuzi. The Rashba, as we've noted, brings various Svaras for why the Shtaros don't prove anything. One of those Svaras was Lagluya Zuzi, that he only drew up the Shtar as a trick, as a stratagem, to get her to reveal money that she was hiding from him, that he really had the right to. So the Shach says, because of that Svara, that's why the Shtar is not a Raya, even if he drew up the Shtar. the property is assumed to be his unless we have solid proof to the contrary. Or as the Rashba says, unless she's muhzekes to have nechse melug, unless we know that she has some assets of her own, then we start taking her claim seriously that maybe these properties in her name were bought from those assets which we knew that she at one point had. The Nesivas HaMishpat, this now is Rav Yaakov of Lisa, not the Sephardic Nesivas Mishpat on Rabbeinu Yeruchim. The Nesivas HaMishpat of Rav Yaakov of Lisa also seems to agree with the Shach that the primary Svar of the Rashba is L'Gluyei Zuzi, and he therefore says there's not actually a machlokus between the Rashba and the Rush. He also understands, like the Shach, that the Rashba's primary reason is we don't trust the Shtar, we don't consider the Shtar dispositive because of the possibility of L'Gluyei Zuzi. He says it depends where the shtaras are. It depends physically who has possession of these shtaras. If the shtaras are still in the possession of the husband, even if they're in her name, then the shach is right. Then the rashba is right. Then we say L'Gluyei Zuzi, and the shtar doesn't prove anything. But if the shtar is biyad ha'isha, tachas yad ha'isha, we no longer say L'Gluyei Zuzi. The details of the sugya of L'Gluyei Zuzi are beyond the scope of this lecture, but the Nesivas argues that once he took the extra step of actually giving the shtar physically into the custody of the woman, in spite of the fact that she's in a sad for a sense of Tocha Bias, for the Nesivas holds, we no longer say L'Gluyei Zuzi. So Nesivas, in principle, basically agrees to the Shach. It all boils down to L'Gluyei Zuzi. But he says, L'Gluyei Zuzi, we don't always say. It depends whether the Shtar is Biyada Baal, Biyada Isha. So that's what he holds. The male is no machlokas, and the Rashba and the Rush are both correct. Up till now, all these poskim, however, we should note, the language of the Rush, the language of the Rashba, the language of most of the Achronim, the issue always was, Were these properties purchased by funds from assets of the woman or not? The shtar was meant to be, it's possibly a raya that the shtar, that the properties were purchased by assets belonging to the isha. As the Rush says, for example, twice in his tshuva, she says, chetzi mishala, ki balakana chetzi mishal mosea, because they were purchased half or even totally with her funds. Later he says, nikar madvarim, chatid me'akarka hein mishala. The funds used to purchase the properties were hers. The Rashba, when he discusses the Shaila too, the Rashba says that her claim is that the properties were purchased, the properties in dispute were purchased, minachasim shenaflam beis aviha. They were purchased with assets, with funds that were hers via inheritance. The other tshuva of the Rashba also, her claim is that these were a matana, that were given to her, al menashein lebala reshusbahen. And most of the poskim, that was always the question. Can the shtar be used to prove that these assets in question were purchased with funds that belonged to her? Or is the shtar not approved for the various reasons we've been discussing, the L'Gluyei Zuzi, to hide his assets, to not appear rich, and all the other spars we've been discussing? Up till now, nobody seems to assume that the shtar itself constitutes a bequest of the property to the woman. The shtar itself, in and of itself, without any taina that the assets used, the funding came from her, nobody seems to be saying that the shtar itself constitutes a transfer of the asset to her. The Prisha possibly alludes to this a little bit, this possibility. The Prisha says that the shtar, according to the Rush, if it was written by the husband, is a raya that shamamon shalah, oh shu hiknala osamamon, or that he was makna to her the moment. Not exactly clear whether he means a pre-existing hakna. The shtar, again, is proof of a pre-existing hakna in the language of the Rishonim, where he actually means to suggest that the shtar itself constitutes a transfer. In any event, the one main shita, in terms of the earlier classic Achronim, who suggests that independent of any claim that the properties were purchased with her fund, independent of that, the shtar itself constitutes a transfer of assets to her, is Rav Yonatan Eibschitz in the Urim V'Tumim. Rav Yonatan Eibschitz notes that the Rashba, in his Tshuvos, when explaining why the shtar is not dispositive, the Rashba says, he brings the Gemara in Bava Kamma, that if a person buys property and instructs the seller, they make out the deed to somebody else, to the Resh Kalusa, to a third party, that doesn't mean anything because he has various reasons why he might have done so. So it's a complicated sugya, and again, the discussion of the sugya is beyond the scope of this lecture, but the Urim V'Tumim claims, not everyone agrees to this, but the Urim V'Tumim claims, based on an earlier discussion that he himself has a couple of simanim earlier, the Urim V'Tumim claims that this is actually a machlokes rishon. The Urim V'Tumim claims that the shita of the Rush, some rishonim, particularly the Rush and a tshuva, a different tshuva, is that any time you put property in the name of the Resh Kalusa, as long as he's not interested in it, as long as he's not claiming it, then you can keep it. But if he's ma'arer, if he says, since you put the property in my name, I thereby have right to the property, then he's achaba. Many rishonim certainly don't agree, and according to some poskim, nobody agrees to such an idea, but the Urim V'Tumim claims that the Rush, among others, holds of this shita. So says the Urim V'Tumim, how can the Shach simply say, how can the Rashba simply say, that because the shtar is in the isha's name, that doesn't mean anything, as per the sugi of Reish Galusa, says the Tumim, some poskim disagree. Some poskim say that the property does belong to the person named in the shtar by the mere virtue of the existence of such a shtar. Mabakach, that the isha doesn't have any assets. She has no nifte malok, so it definitely wasn't funded. We definitely don't consider the possibility that it was funded with her assets. Who cares? Once the Baal made that fateful decision to put the property in her name, she automatically is zochiv. She claims the property. Says the Tumim, he's so enamored of the Shita, so he says, Machlok Svishanim, Lachain, Din Zeh, the din of the Rashba and the Shach, is Tzarachian. The Rashba may be right in his own Shita, but Halakha Lamaitz is Tzarachian. Tolivim Machlok is Hanal. Imkain, mi yoti miyad isha misafik. The Isha is Muksuk, he says. Who will possibly compel the Isha? What basin will compel the Isha to turn over the property? So in spite of the fact that some of the early poskim have said that as long as it wasn't funded with her assets, she's not going to be entitled to it, the Tumim says, yes, she will. According to some poskim, she will, and misafik, she is the muksa. So, in summary, we have basically a machlokas, Rashba and Rosh, an apparent machlokas, and the Siva says they don't really disagree. Depends whether the Baal is in physical custody of the shtar or the Isha is in custody of the shtar, but Pashtas, according to most poskim, we have machlokas, Rashba and Rosh. The Rosh says we typically do follow the shtar. The Rashba says we typically don't follow the shtar unless she is muchzekas to have assets. The Shach says the Ikar is like the Rashba. The Smach seems to feel the Ikar is like the Rosh. And again, even the Rosh and the Rashba seem to be primarily discussing the question of whether the shtar can be used as proof that the properties were actually purchased with her assets. The Urim Batumim says that even if they weren't purchased with her assets, there is a major sheet in the poskim, and Misafek were choshish for the sheet, there is a major sheet in the poskim, even without the question of whether the properties are purchased with her assets. The mere fact that the shtar is in her name entitles her to claim the assets if she presses that claim. And this is pretty much the picture of the sugya as given by the early poskim, the classic poskim, discussing the Gemaras, the Rishonim, up to the 19th century. In the following share on the topic, Be'ezras Hashem, we will discuss what the later poskim have said, the 19th, 20th century poskim have said, how they've applied these rules to modern situations with titles and land registries and deeds, cars, homes, bank accounts, how they've applied these rules, how they've ruled halacha lemaisa in cases where assets are in a woman's name, whether that means the woman is entitled to those assets or not.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.